We are back on Get Up, and let's get up and go with news from the world of tennis. And just this morning, the world's number one ranked player, Novak Djokovic, announcing that he has tested positive for the coronavirus. This is the fourth player to test positive after a tournament that he himself helped organize just in the last week or so. He was seen at several parties there, and so now he has tested positive. Meanwhile, the Orlando Pride have withdrawn from the upcoming NWSL Challenge Cup after six players and four staff members tested positive for COVID-19. That tournament is scheduled to begin this Saturday. And the PGA Championship will be held at its originally scheduled site of Harding Park in San Francisco without fans. The first major on the 2020 schedule set to be played from August 6th through the 9th. And with that, as we approach at the top of the hour, 10 o'clock in the morning here in the East, I'm Mike Greenberg in Bristol, Connecticut. This is Get Up on ESPN. We'll be with you for just under another hour, 10:50 Eastern time this morning. First Take will come your way, but actually Stephen A. Smith is going to join us in just a moment to talk about what was without question the story of the day yesterday. And it came from the world of NASCAR. And this photo, which has been seen now and been liked over half a million times, 540,000 times at last check that I saw, was Bubba Wallace, whose day began yesterday with a hug from Richard Petty, who was there to support his driver, the 82-year-old Petty, his first race since the pandemic began. And here's the moment with the entire, it felt like the entire NASCAR community, dozens of drivers and their teams pushing Wallace's car to the front of the line, and several of them, as he was overcome by emotion, coming over and offering individual support. There, of course, is Petty doing so, and Jimmy Johnson and many of the other drivers. And then coming up here will be the selfie that I was referring to. I checked right before we came on the air this morning, and it had been liked 540,000 times. This picture that Bubba Wallace took with what felt like the entire world of NASCAR standing behind him and supporting him. And then, of course, the race would begin, and with 28 laps to go, he'd get a push from Joey Logano, and Wallace would be the leader. He would hold that lead for a lap before being passed. He'd ultimately finish 14th. But after the race, he made it clear, as far as he was concerned, he was a big winner on the day.
I'm proud to stand where I'm at and carry a new face. Look at this. First time right here from Atlanta. That is so cool. The sport is changing. The deal that happened yesterday, sorry I'm not wearing my mask, but I wanted to show whoever it was that you're not going to take away my smile, and I'm going to keep on going. All in all, we won today. The pre-race deal was probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to witness in my life. From all the supporters, from drivers, from crew members, everybody here, the badass fan base, thank you guys for coming out here. This is truly incredible, and I'm proud to be a part of this sport.
What a day it was, and there was a lot of reaction on social media. Wallace's team, Richard Petty Motorsports, tweeting, "Proud of you, Bubba Wallace. Keep on smiling." NASCAR's official account added, "It's moments like this that make us proud to have Bubba Wallace in the garage every weekend." Our Marty Smith was on hand for all of this at Talladega yesterday. He was with us an hour ago.
It was such a resounding statement by the sport, by the driving corps. And one of the reasons, Mike, that it's so beautiful is because it was initiated, facilitated, and executed by the driving corps. This wasn't some PR thing by NASCAR. This was a group of men standing behind a peer and a brother. And it was just one of the most amazing moments I've ever seen in sport.
And with that, we bring in for some conversation, Jay Will is back with us, and Stephen A. Smith is here. As I mentioned, about 50 minutes or so from now, he will be back with First Take. But Stephen A., I'll start with you. It was a day unlike any I can ever remember, certainly in NASCAR and in practically any other sport. What did you think about all the stuff we saw yesterday at Talladega?
Well, I think it's something to be appreciated. There's no question about that, considering the history of NASCAR as it pertains to African Americans and the absence of involvement on several levels. To see Bubba Wallace being supported by his contemporaries all around the sport was definitely something to behold. I watched Paul Feinbaum earlier. I've definitely watched Marty Smith. They can chronicle the history of NASCAR. They can talk to you about how non-inclusionary the sport has been to by by and large, for the most part, the Confederate flag symbolizing what it symbolizes to African Americans in this nation, and the fact that a fan base, along with the sport itself, pretty much could give a damn for so many, many years about how African Americans felt about that. To go from what you know its history to be, at least to some degree, to what we witnessed yesterday was definitely something special, and it's something to be celebrated. And the flip, with the flip side to that, however, is that you can't stop there. The reality is that it was a symbolic gesture, a profound symbolic gesture, but nonetheless, just a gesture. And what the real work that comes into play is when we're going to witness and see how inclusionary the sport is, how many people it employs, you know, its dealings with the black community, what it does to ingratiate itself with the black community, instead of in terms of addressing some of the sensitivities evolving around the sport that has been decried for years. Those are the kind of things that I'm talking about. Some symbolic gestures. I'm not trying to minimize the importance of it. I understand it has to start somewhere. That's an incredible way to start. We get all of that. But the flip side is, in terms of some real meat being added to the bone, in terms of things really, really getting done to address some of the systemic policies, some of the systemic tendencies that they've had in place for so many years. Let's see where they go from here. It was really nice to see everybody out there. Let's see what kind of contribution they make to the kind of things that I mentioned moving forward. That's when I'll stand up and applaud even more. For right now, I appreciate the symbolic gesture. Thank you. But I'm not going to throw a parade over it.
Jay Williams, what do you think?
You know, Brittany, is this a long-term game? Yes, it is. But, you know, my freshman year at Coach K used to always tell me things about, hey, look, you have to focus on the game within the game. This is a series of games, and you have to get a series of small wins that accumulate towards a bigger win. I think this was another win for NASCAR yesterday. And just in the way everything was handled, it's easy to conceal racism. It was easy for, you know, NASCAR, when they found the noose, when they took it to the president to say, hey, we want to conceal this. Instead of concealing it, they decided to open it up to everybody and combat that and talk about it openly. Even with, you know, the sign flying, the Confederate flag, you know, defund NASCAR, addressing that openly and combating that and openly talking about that. And watching Bubba yesterday, I'll tell you, I've had a lot of friends who are African-American who are watching this, who are now becoming slow fans of NASCAR, and they want to see how things are progressing. So, you know, I'm with Stephen A. that there's still a long way to go, but I like what I am seeing right now, and I'm liking this community and people that are standing up for what's right. And the one thing I tweeted the other day is I said, you know, look, if you have hate in your heart, I don't have time for you. The future is moving towards inclusion and love. And if you want to be on board that ship, get on board. If you're not, I can also say to NASCAR stands for this, we don't got time for you. And it's good to see NASCAR and we be in the same sentence for once.
You know, Stephen A., here's how I took it, or one of the many different ways they could look at it, is that I think there were a lot of people, and let's just say those are represented by the people who are flying that plane over the track on Sunday, who were looking for tacit signals from NASCAR and maybe from some of the personnel, some of the drivers, that, yeah, we get it. This is stuff we have to say and stuff we have to do. But the truth is, we still see you and understand your point. And what I saw yesterday was a unanimous showing by what felt like literally every single driver and their entire team. So basically everyone who makes up NASCAR who actually matters, saying, no, we are fully on board with this change. We are fully on board with moving this into a direction that it has heretofore never even considered. And so to me, that felt like the most important part of yesterday. If anyone was looking for any tacit signals from a sport with its history that, yeah, we know we have to make some changes because that's what people are telling us that we have to do, but we're not really fully on board with it, I thought yesterday was a resounding statement that unanimously they are on board.
Well, I definitely appreciate where you're coming from, and I don't disagree with it from your vantage point. What I'm saying is that as a black person that has watched things transpire throughout this nation's history, there have been plenty of moments. It may not involve NASCAR, but there have been plenty of examples that we can point to that people, you know, they seem to be sending a resounding message that this would not be tolerated, that we're going to move forward, that we're going to be progressive in our thinking, that we're going to be more inclusionary, that we're going to be more fair-minded in terms of surrendering some of our privilege to make sure that others that are less fortunate, that are disenfranchised, that have been ostracized, ultimately get a fair shot at the apple pie, per se. Those are the kind of things that there have been many instances throughout our nation's history where we've seen folks send that kind of message. And then in the days and weeks to, and months to follow, things dissipated so drastically, it was almost as if nothing happened because a few were appeased at the expense of the many. So what I'm saying to you, Greeny, is that I can appreciate where you're coming from. I don't disagree with you. You have a very valid point. I truly appreciate where you're coming from. And I appreciate the gesture that we saw from NASCAR. All I'm trying to say is that that's today. What's going to be the case next month? In 6 months from now, and a year from now, that's what I'm keeping my eyes on. I appreciate where you're coming from because you're basically pointing to the fact that this is something that never happened before in the case of NASCAR. I agree with that. But I've seen plenty of African Americans throughout this nation's history approach NASCAR about the need to change. And suddenly it's transpired because the momentum right now is such that they feel like they may not have a choice because their sport could be drastically compromised. It sort of leads towards what Steven Jackson and others were alluding to. Not that I totally agree with them, and Jay was with me on that as well, but I did get their point. In other words, if we play the games, is the momentum going to quell and ultimately dissipate and evaporate? That's what they were concerned about with the National Basketball Association, which is over 75% black. If you have that concern about the NBA, could you imagine what our concern should be about NASCAR? So I'm not dropping the ball. I'm not taking my eyes off that point. I appreciate the gesture, but I'm watching.
I hear you, and I don't disagree. I think we both agree with each other. I guess what I'm saying is it would have been easy, I think, to have seen some tacit signals in the opposite direction from someone at NASCAR, and I didn't see any of it myself. I thought that, for me, that
I
felt significant
either.
Yesterday.
All I'm going to say to add on to what Stephen A. said, looks can be perceiving now. Just because everybody was in that picture and it looked one way, don't think that everybody feels that way. Yeah. But now what's happening is NASCAR being on this side of it, those people are becoming the minority faster and faster by the second, and they have a chance to be exposed. So I'm with Stephen A. There's a lot more watching to do. Still, like, ultimately, the direction it's going.
Yeah, that's a good place to leave it. Go ahead, Stephen. Yeah.
I want to say something, and it's going to seem piercing, but it is the truth, because especially if you talk to African Americans, particularly in those areas of the country, you know what they'll say to you, Greeny? Because they've said it to me.
Yeah.
Guess what? We used to see the KKK in white sheets and what have you. Now we see them at work. They're just wearing suits and ties and they're smiling in our face. But ultimately, they feel entirely differently. There's a large segment of the African-American population in this country, particularly in certain segments throughout this country, that look and they say people are not going to be as obvious and as conspicuous as they were in the past with their prejudices. They've learned to be more adroit and be under the radar and execute that way. These are the kind of things that people in the African community, African American community, have been saying for years. They're saying it now louder than they ever have in recent memory anyway. And that's the thing that I think people need to take stock of. We're not falling for some of the symbolic gestures. People are watching.
And we can keep an eye on it. And I can tell you this, we'll be able to talk about it with Bubba Wallace himself. He will be our guest on Thursday on Get Up. You guys stay with me here. We'll have more to do with you. And I want to remind everyone that Bubba will be our guest Thursday morning live here on Get Up. We'll talk about these experiences and all the stuff that we're talking about here. What does the future of NASCAR look like through his eyes? We'll talk about that and more. Bubba Wallace with me on Thursday. Meanwhile, more NFL conversation as we continue. Baker Mayfield says he's going to let his play do all the talking, but if his play doesn't get the Browns to the playoffs, will the season be a letdown? We'll answer that question and more as we continue Get Up on ESPN.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like your mom when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up, and many consider this a make-or-break year for Baker Mayfield in Cleveland after a 6-10 season under Freddie Kitchens. Bleacher Report detailed what a successful 2020 season would look like for every team, and this is what they said about the Browns. A one-and-done playoff appearance, despite more struggles by Mayfield, would be a letdown considering how high the ceiling is for both quarterback and team, and another non-playoff campaign despite strong play by Mayfield would be even more troubling considering the talent on the roster. This, after all, is a team that features six former Pro Bowlers on offense alone. So it seems as though they're saying this team needs to make the playoffs and Baker Mayfield needs to play well. Let's get into it here with Adam Schefter and D. Wood. And look at my crew is ready to go here. David Pollack is with me as well. Schefty, what sense are you getting from Cleveland about their expectations there? They make the huge change, the coaching change there, but they don't get really any offseason to speak of, at least to this point. It's all been so unusual. What sense of optimism are you hearing out of Cleveland?
What's amazing, Greeny, is if we go back 1 year ago, everybody was talking all about the Cleveland Browns the way they're talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now. The expectations were so high and the Browns disappointed, as they usually have done since they returned to Cleveland. In this particular case, they have faded off the radar. And I don't think very many people are talking about them. They're talking about the MVP in Baltimore, Lamar Jackson, Ben Roethlisberger coming back, Joe Burrow going to Cincinnati. It seems as if all the attention that went to Cleveland last year is going to every other team in the division except Cleveland, which is the way I think the Browns prefer it. Because, again, this is a good team. It's a team that underachieved last year. And they made the changes they did to bring in Kevin Stefanski as the head coach and Andrew Berry as the general manager. And let's not forget that the talent was in place to have a good season. And I think this Browns team should be better than people think.
Well, yes, I do too. And if not, then there's really a problem. Because if you just look at the names on the backs of the jerseys, and I just, while you were talking, jotted down Garrett, OBJ, Landry, Njoku, Hunt, Chubb, and there are obviously many more. David, it comes back to the quarterback. You obviously covered Baker Mayfield, who had a spectacular season, both literally and figuratively, when he won the Heisman. What were your expectations of him as a pro, and what do you think he is right now?
Well, what he is right now, if you look at last year, it was a big step backwards. You know, every statistical category you look at, more interceptions, the touchdowns were less. Like, he just, the quarterback rating dropped significantly. So last year was a big step in the wrong direction. Now listen, we also got to take into account all the head coaches, all the change, all the turmoil, that has to come into it. But Baker Mayfield has all the prerequisite tools around him to be successful. You just named all the names on the back of the jerseys. He has all the pieces in place. Here's where I'll disagree a little bit with the playoff conversation. We can talk about all the pieces in place. Lamar Jackson has more. Lamar Jackson's squad is better. Are you going to be surprised if Pittsburgh has better coaching than the Browns and is a better outfit than the Browns? No. So I think this is a huge year for Baker Mayfield to see if he's the future of the team. But I don't think it includes has to go to the playoffs, because the Ravens and the Steelers have proven the last umpteen years how much of a better organization they are than the Browns. That doesn't change in 1 year.
What do you think, D? Well, that's an interesting way of looking at it. You'll be with me all season long. We'll be talking about this team every single week. What will they have to do for you to say, yeah, this was a good year for Cleveland?
Well, listen, I know that everyone was on the Cleveland hype train last year because of, you know, they got OBJ and all those type of things. But I always say the name on the back of the jersey doesn't change the culture. The culture is like turning the Titanic. You're talking about a team that only just as recently as 2017 was winless. And they've gone through three head coaches in 3 years. It's hard to win when there's constant change. Yes, they're very talented, but they're trying to overcome that type of culture change. And also within a division where you have Mike Tomlin, John Harbaugh, two of the best head coaches that we have in our league. So that's what the Cleveland Browns are up against. I don't believe that they have to make the playoffs in order to be moving in the right direction as an organization. But I do think it's imperative for Baker Mayfield to flip those interceptions around, because he was atrocious throwing 21 interceptions last year. If he does that, if he replicates anything like that this year, then we're going to be talking about him in the same sentence as Mitchell Trubisky and not exercising his fifth-year option.
That's exactly where I was going to go, Schefty. That's where he will find himself next year. After three seasons as a rookie in the first round, that's when the Browns will have to decide really if they're going to make a longer-term commitment to him in the way that Chicago has decided not to do with Trubisky. So it feels, in that way at least, like it is something of a make-or-break year for Baker Mayfield.
And we're talking about the quarterback money going up again. And we're talking about it rising with Mahomes and Deshaun Watson and potentially Dak Prescott. And so if Baker Mayfield plays well, he's going to make huge money. And if he doesn't, then it's going to be a huge setback for this organization. But the one thing about Baker Mayfield is, having seen him at the Super Bowl in January, February, he did seem like last season humbled him. He did seem like he had matured, and it did seem like he's ready to have a big year this year.
I agree. We had him on the set there that day, Schefter, you were there with us, and the conversation with Rex and everything else, and he seems like a guy who realizes it is time to put up and shut up. Where people have heard everything he's had to say, now it's time to go out there and win some games. I'm on record as saying I predict they're going to do it. The Browns are going to make the playoffs. We'll take a break. We'll come back. A glimmer of hope. Major League Baseball's owners vote to proceed with a 60-game season. Mark DeShera next on what we will see on the field, because baseball is coming. But first, a little sneaky Hembo time. Hembo insisted on a baseball question today. Who was the last player to hit 400 in the first 60 games of a season? That's the question. The answer's next. Get up on ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your baby to let you sleep in?
What? We could sleep in another half hour? Thanks, sweetheart. And you'll change yourself too?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
We are back, and it's been a while since we've had a baseball question from Hembo, and this one today is for our slugger, Mark DeShera. Here we go, Tex. They're going to play 60 games this year if all goes as planned. Who was the last player to hit 400 in the first 60 games of a season?
I feel like Hembo is trying to trip me up here. This is like a trick question. I'm going to say it was last year, Cody Bellinger.
Okay, actually, I think he was trying to trick you because the player who it is Chipper Jones in 2008, and you were hitting in the lineup behind him when he did it. So that, I think,
there you go,
is why he put it in there.
All about the protection, Greeny.
All right, I don't know if you're paying attention. Here we go.
Chipper was getting meatballs.
MLB owners yesterday voting unanimously to proceed with the 2020 season after the union's executive board voted against the league's latest offer of a 60-game schedule with expanded playoffs. Jeff Passan joined us in our last hour and had this to say about baseball's return.
This is finally a step in the right direction. And of the players with whom I spoke last night, and there were a lot of them, not a single one said, we're going to pass up this opportunity. We're not going to figure out how to get the health and safety protocols taken care of. This looks like it's going to happen. Now, we've been at this point plenty of times, but we haven't been this close to say that there is a schedule that is set and there are just a couple of small steps left. So by 5 o'clock Eastern today, we should know, Greeny, if in fact we can for certain say that baseball is going to be back.
It's remarkable. It's only in the world of baseball circa 2020 could the players vote something down, and then that day, all of a sudden, it feels like, okay, we're the closest that we've ever been. It's crazy. But, Tex, yesterday we learned that two NBA players are opting out of that league's restart plan. Do you expect any baseball players to do something like that?
I think there will be a few players that won't play for various reasons, but I don't expect a huge rash of players that are just going to say, forget it, I'm not playing this year. But what I do expect is a lot of guys that come down with a sore elbow or sore hamstring, sore knee, whatever it might be, and play a few weeks. Unfortunately, because we don't have expanded playoffs, there's going to be a lot of teams that are out of the season before it even started. It's going to be quick. It's going to be ugly. And some players might say, you know what, forget it. I got a sore back. I'm not going to play at all after the first few weeks. And that would be unfortunate, but I think it'll happen.
What does 60 games look like? Baseball has always been a marathon. This one year, we're going to get a sprint. I myself am intrigued, but I don't have a real sense of what to expect. What do you expect it to look like?
Well, you know, last week we talked about how I'd be really excited about a 60-game regular season if we had expanded playoffs. Mm-hmm. Now that we don't have expanded playoffs, it'll make the regular season very interesting because some of the best teams are not making the playoffs. And I'm talking to you, LA Dodgers fans and New York Yankees fans and Tampa Bay Ray fans. These teams that have really great rosters that were expected to win out over 162, over 60 games, if you get off to a slow start, you're not making the playoffs. So I do think the regular season is going to be very interesting. Unfortunately, we're going to see October baseball with some of the best teams at home.
Absolutely. Everyone will point out that last year's World Series champs, the Washington Nationals, were well under 500 when they got to the 50-game mark of the season, so clearly they wouldn't have made it. It's going to be something a little bit different. Meanwhile, Tex, you were a part of the union for such a long time. What do you think these last 6 weeks of really ugly back-and-forth bickering tell us about the future of the sport?
Well, all you need to know, Greeny, is that the players rejected a better deal last night that they said they're going to approve today. That doesn't make any sense. And whether that means they're going to file a grievance or at least have the ability to file a grievance in the future just means the next 2 years are going to be really ugly between the players and the owners. We have a 2020 season that's in doubt because of COVID-19. A lot of players are unhappy right now. They're going to go into 2021 with a very low bar in free agency. There's a lot of free agents that are not going to get signed. I mean, if I'm a free agent right now, I'm very worried about the 2021 season. And then after the 2021 season, I have a new CBA to negotiate. It's going to be tough.
These are going to be it's going to be a rough stretch. Hopefully, we get some fun with it this summer. And obviously, Tex, you'll be along for that ride with us as often as we can do it. Thank you very much for being here this morning. Meanwhile, back to football. Unhappy with his current contract, first-team All-Pro safety Jamal Adams has told the Jets he wants to be traded. He did that last Thursday. The Cowboys are one of seven teams Adams would reportedly welcome being traded to. And in case you haven't seen this, on Sunday, he told a fan he's trying to get to Dallas.
What's up, bro?
Hey, what's up, bro?
What's up,
hey, you coming to Dallas?
Hey, man, I'm trying, bro.
All right, so that was depressing. And then there was this. After Jet safety Marcus May tweeted, "I've been getting all this new fake love now, shaking my head," Adams tweeted back, "Brother, just keep being you. Show the world why you're the best free safety in the game. You deserve everything coming your way. I'm going to miss balling with you the most. Believe that. Love you forever." So you got that here. Shefty, we asked you yesterday as we bring our crew back in here for some discussion. Look at D. Wood shaking his head. I'll get to you in a second, big fella. But Shefty, any update here? What after another day of this, what are we expecting to happen here with Jamal?
Listen, as great as Jamal Adams is, this is a one-sided conversation right now. The comments keep coming from him, trying to get to Dallas, goodbye to Marcus May, on and on. But the fact of the matter is the Jets' stance hasn't changed one bit. They're not interested in trading him at this point in time. It doesn't mean they won't trade him later on. It doesn't mean that some teams won't call the Jets and try to make an offer to try to procure Adams. But the fact of the matter is here that the Jets are not looking to deal one of the best defensive players in all of football, who's still on a rookie contract, who still has this year, and the Jets have a fifth-year option and the franchise tags. And so the Jets have his contractual rights here. And so it would be bad business for the Jets to just move on from him. But I would say that in recent seasons, we've seen more and more players exerting their will and getting their way. And clearly this looks like a case of another great young player exerting his will and trying to force his way out of New York at a time where the Jets do not intend to trade him.
D. Wood, I saw you shaking your head. What do you think of all this?
Well, Greeny, I'm selfish. You know I follow the Jets closely, man. And Jamal Adams is one of the best players in the National Football League. I love watching the man play every Sunday when the Jets are playing. And just to see how this whole situation is deteriorating, it's just beyond baffling. Because when you think about the Jets, over the last 10-plus years, they've had three all-pro type guys. Jamal Adams, Darrell Revis, and John Abraham. They traded two of them. And now you got the other star, Jamal Adams, who wants to be traded from the Jets. So it's just unbelievable that the Jets and Jamal Adams can't get this thing figured out. And I hope they do, because like Adam said, that the Jets have, you know, contractual. They have them for 2-plus years. So hopefully they can get this thing figured out, man. But it's just embarrassing all the way around.
Tim, in your experience, when a player clearly wants out and the team, if the Jets decide they're going to hold firm and tell Jamal, if you want to play in the NFL, you're going to have to play here. In your experience, what impact does that have on the team, on a locker room? What happens then?
Well, it can become a distraction, especially if the player is really disgruntled and starts to become a problem. But Adam said this is a one-way conversation, really, and it is right now. The Jets basically are like, look, why would we trade him? Think about it this way. When you talk about what's left on his contract, the fifth-year option, plus the potential to be franchised after that, you're talking about having Jamal Adams for about $22 million over the next 3 years. If you are the New York Jets, you better be getting a ton in return, you know, to be able to move on from Jamal Adams when you essentially have his rights for 3 years for that amount of money. And everyone is right when they talk about how good of a player he is. So if you're the New York Jets, you basically need to talk to, you know, Jamal's agent and be like, listen, you need to tell him to relax a little bit. Like, we will do this, you know, maybe a year from now. But like, doing this right now makes no sense for our football team.
And Shefty, the idea that someone's going to trade for him and then sign him to the money that he wants. What does a player like him? It's a non-premium position. I put that in air quotes because I don't like the term. But we saw what Jalen Ramsey fetched in a trade for Jacksonville. What could someone like the Cowboys offer if he's trying to get there?
Again, it's going to take, I think, a huge offer to pry him loose from the Jets. It's not going to be just a first-round pick. It'll be a first-round pick and a second-round pick, maybe two ones. Jets aren't moving him for anything less than a blockbuster offer, Greeny.
All right, we'll wait and see what happens. This is what constitutes fun when you're a Jet fan, and we're working our way towards hopefully some sort of training camp. As we continue, the former MVP remains unsigned. Shefty on the likely landing spots for Cam Newton. As we continue next, Get Up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Back on Get Up, and Cam Newton remains unsigned this offseason. The former league MVP released by the Panthers back in March after the team failed to find a trade partner. The main question, of course, about Cam is his health. Foot and shoulder injuries have limited his playing time the last two seasons, and I feel like it's something we haven't talked about a lot lately. As my guys are back here, Shefty, I'll come back to you. Is there anything new with Cam as he tries to figure out what his football future looks like?
Greeny, I think the closer we get to camp and the more realistic it is for players to start taking physicals for teams, I think that's when we're going to start to hear something on Cam Newton. Until that happens, it's going to be hard for a team to make a move. And I think Cam probably has adjusted and gotten used to the idea that he's not going to land the type of contract he wants. He's not going to land the type of open-ended starting job that he wants. But I think there will be opportunity for him. But I think teams would like to see that physical get done. I think that's going to get done as we get closer to camp here. The weeks are getting closer here, and I think Cam Newton's time is coming here.
Tim, what makes sense to you as far as Cam's next move?
I've been saying it. I think it's the New England Patriots. And, you know, I've heard people say, well, hey, it's not really a match between Belichick and Cam and the personalities and that type of thing. But, you know, Adam referenced kind of the market drying up a little bit. I'm sure there's a bit of, you know, maybe, you know, I guess, you know, humility that would come from this for Cam in terms of what the opportunities are. And a chance to go to New England, I think, makes the most sense to compete with a guy like Jarrett Stidham for the starting job. And I think people need to understand, like, the production for Cam Newton from 2011 to 2018, if you throw out the 2019 season where he just played two games, is absurd. He's accounted for 240 touchdowns, which would put him only behind Breeze, Brady, and Rodgers during that stretch. Like, he's been too productive to just be sitting out there if he is, in fact, healthy.
Yeah, D. Wood. I mean, this is a guy who, if he is healthy, is far better than the starting quarterback on probably at least half the teams in the NFL, if not more. What do you think happens next?
Yeah, I think Tim brings up.
Go ahead,
D-Wood.
No, I think Tim brings up a good point in New England. I also throw out Buffalo. You know, obviously Josh Allen's a starter up there, but if you look at what Buffalo has going on, clearly they feel like they're the team to beat in the AFC East. One of the best defenses in the National Football League. And Josh Allen and Cam Newton had similar styles. You're talking about two big quarterback, mobile, big arms. You know, so they play a similar style, a similar brand of football. And we know that the backup to Josh Allen is Matt Barkley, who's not really in the similar mold as Josh Allen. So We know that these starting quarterback positions have dried up. So if you're looking for a quarterback that's possibly in the same mold as Josh Allen, why not pick up a Cam Newton and see what happens?
I like that one. I like that one a lot. I'm going to leave it there because we're running out of time. Guys, thank you, all of you, so much for being with us today and bearing with us on what's been sort of an unusual day following Korean baseball and leading up to First Take, which is coming up in just a few minutes here on ESPN. The NASCAR family showing support for Bubba Wallace, Stephen A., and Max, with much more on First Take in just 5 minutes here on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by USAA, proud supporter of the military community. What you're made of, we're made for. And we are just getting started on what will be a very busy day on ESPN all morning long. First Take is less than a minute away. SportsCenter will follow that. We have a soccer doubleheader this afternoon, 1:25 and then 3:30 Eastern time. Then a two-hour SportsCenter begins at 6 o'clock Eastern time. The PTI guys will be along the way on SportsCenter with SVP at 11 Eastern after Top Rank Boxing. Round out your day here on ESPN. And very quickly, just to mention again, where we began our show with the breaking news that Novak Djokovic, the number one ranked tennis player in the world, has tested positive for coronavirus. He had previously signaled that he did not intend to play in the U.S. Open this year. This may have no bearing on that. That's still not scheduled for quite some time. We'll see, and we'll see you tomorrow for Get Up. First Take starts now.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claims service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.